Hello and welcome to Animates. This program is recorded in the 2RPH studios for the RPH network. I'm Katie Brooks. While we try our best to bring you new material each fortnight, this can be difficult in pandemic times, so occasionally listeners get the odd repeat. But today I'm going to play you an old interview for an entirely different reason. This episode is dedicated to the memory of my mum, Catherine Arch, who died recently. She was a dedicated radio listener and appreciated the work of RPH in particular. Once I got into radio, she made a point of listening to anything I produced, so naturally, she never missed Animates. To honour her, please enjoy an interview I recorded in 2019 with Chloe Marr, who she described as a real tonic. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Chloe Marr, who will give us an insight into what life is like living in a household with a couple of assistance animals supporting different people, as well as a whole zoo of other pets. So, hi Chloe, and welcome to Animates. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And yourself?
I'm good, thanks. Excited to have you here because I should let listeners know that you are a friend of mine and I've been wanting to get you on this show for a very long time. You are a person who, yourself, you have some disabilities, don't you?
I sure do. I have a couple.
Yes, unfortunately it's not just one per person per lifetime.
No, if only.
Yeah, very unfair that. Could you tell us the rather boring details of what you have and how that affects you?
Okay, so for starters I'm legally blind, but I also have an autoimmune condition called rheumatoid arthritis, which is basically where your immune system attacks itself. So, for example, if you sprain your ankle, your body makes antibodies or inflammation to attack those areas, and basically my body just keeps making inflammation and keeps attacking my body, and that's not much fun. So it causes a lot of pain to my muscles and joints, and I also have fibromyalgia, which sometimes links with rheumatoid arthritis, and it can be a younger person condition, but yeah, it does affect a wide range of ages, but it's a bit different to like an older person's normal arthritis. It's more of a aggressive thing that happens in your immune system. So that's basically what I have. It's very painful and affects my joints and muscles basically, and can affect organs. But I have a lot of assistance and aids and animals that help me get through it.
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit about your animals and how you developed this love of animals that you have?
Well, I've always loved animals, even when I was a child. I always had a special bond with them, as I guess a lot of people do, and they always brighten your day. They do silly things that just make you laugh. And yeah, I have two cats and three dogs and a lizard. So I've got quite a bit of a menagerie here. So basically, I have a guide dog who has been retired called Elsie. My husband's totally blind and he had Elsie as a guide dog. And she used to work for him all the time, and they worked great as a team. And then she started to get very close to me because at the time I was getting a lot sicker and a lot more pain, and she sort of could detect things, I guess, more than most people or other animals could, and you just build bonds with them. They always come to you and sort of show you some love if you're not feeling well and that sort of thing. So yeah, I have a very special bond with all of my animals, but Elsie's my special girl that helps me get through everything.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about Elsie. It's interesting you say that she started out working with your husband, but now she's moved over to you.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about why she had to be retired and how you ended up having her work with you instead?
Sure. Well, basically what happened is, so Anthony was working with her full-time, and I was getting sicker, and she must have been detecting this. And so she didn't want to go to work with Anthony. So she would like, she used to love her job. She used to get so excited when the harness would come out. She'd get so excited, and she did such a great job. And then as she started to get fitter as well, which she's a bit of a slower-paced girl, so I think him walking around everywhere just tired her out, and she just didn't want to do it anymore, and she just wanted to be with me. And one day she just decided to go for a walk down the main street in the Blue Mountains towards a heap of cars, and we thought, okay, it's time for retirement. This is not a good thing. So basically she was not concentrating and just wanted to basically be with me. And she was, whenever we'd go towards home, she'd just pick up and be so happy. But most of the time she was like, just didn't want to do it. Was not in the mindset anymore. And I guess everyone goes through those things, like with jobs and things. You love something for a while and then maybe you get sick of it. I guess it happens with guide dogs as well sometimes.
It's almost like her caring instincts were just working so well. She's going, I see a problem here. I need to help with it.
Exactly. I need to stay home and help me. And I'd be not well and be in bed a lot. And she'd want to be with me, which was very hard because she wanted to do her job but also wanted to be with me. But at the end, she just wasn't concentrating enough and we had to sadly retire her. But now she's my assistant's dog and pet therapy dog, and I'd be lost without her.
So could you tell me a little bit about how you ended up getting her registered and making the switch over to you and to this new role?
Well, basically, when she retired, we spoke to someone from Guide Dogs regarding her doing tasks for me, and I showed them what I'd personally trained her after she wasn't working anymore because she needed something to do still, and she loved helping me. So I would teach her how to go and get my medication and different things, and I showed the guide dog lady what she can do, and she said, oh, she's definitely to a standard of an assistant dog, and she would try and help with that. And she couldn't get me to the point of all the paperwork becoming an official assistant dog, but she does all the duties an assistant dog does at the moment, but I don't have the right papers yet to be able to take her on to like claims and things. But she is a service dog and always will be a service dog, but I just don't have the right paperwork because usually once they retire, it's hard to get the papers right to let them gain certain accesses to things again. So it can be a bit complicated.
But she's good around the house and that sort of thing for you.
Definitely. Yeah. And she can come to the shop with me and all that sort of thing. And she's fully been accepted into public access areas and all that sort of thing. So she's a great help to me and lots of other people as well.
And so can you tell me, you know, since we're speaking about guide dogs, what it's like to be married to somebody else who has an assistance animal and have that dog in your life as well?
It's quite interesting. It can be quite funny. Like, they both do different things. So we've got Yorick now as well, which is Anthony's new guide dog, and he's a great little guy. And I try very hard not to get too close to him because that's what happened with Elsie. Elsie got too close to me, I think. And so she built the bond to and didn't want to leave me. But really it's the same as any other relationship, I guess. It's just the sense that we've got disabilities and assistance animals and guide dogs help us with those disabilities to live a normal life. But the two dogs get on really well together. They're best friends. They just want to play constantly. There's no jealousy. They just want to be with everyone.
That's nice. And can you tell us what life is like for you, because I know you have good days and you have bad days, and your animals generally are quite supportive for you, aren't you?
Yeah, I know you
often sort of say about, you know, just snuggling with different pets and that sort of thing.
Yes. Well, I used to have a cat called Matilda that sadly passed away last year, and she was very good at telling. I have a lot of anxiety and some depression due to my illnesses, as I guess most people probably would if they're sort of bed bound and have a bit of trouble getting out and about. So Matilda, my cat, she could pick up on things, and she would, whenever I'd have a blood test at home, she would know, and she'd actually come and lay on me and calm me down. And I don't know how they know these things, but some of my pets don't really give two toots about me at times. They're just like, oh, just give me the food. You know, I don't really care about you right now. I just want my stomach full.
Yeah, but I suppose that's the thing, is that the variety makes it good, because you don't want to be kind of covered in animals all day.
No,
well, maybe
exactly.
You do.
A few of them are quite independent and just want to do their own thing, but I've got a couple that are a bit more snuggly and just pick up on things a bit more and just like to make my day a bit brighter. They come and lay on me and cuddle with me and just make me laugh. And sometimes they do, like Elsie does, the pressure therapy, where they like lay on you and help keep you calm and also help with pain by giving you pressure.
Okay, so how does that work? That sounds interesting.
It is interesting. So basically, like, she'll lay on my, or like across my hip, for example, because I get a lot of hip pain and back pain. So she'll lay across me and the pressure will cause pain, but in the long run it'll actually make it feel better, because I guess it's like having a massage. It hurts at first, but it relieves it afterwards and during it. it's a bit hard to explain. And for some people, they do deep pressure therapy for things such as autism and stuff as well, but it also can be used for pain and anxiety. They feel more grounded and calm.
And I suppose it's also a bit of a heat pack as well.
Yeah, exactly. So she does great at that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I've actually experienced something similar like that. I remember one time I had a broken pelvis and I was over visiting my cousins and their little puppy, she came and lay on my lap and she was lying right on the injury, but it actually, to me, it was like this heat pack sitting on me and it was quite helpful.
It can be very helpful. It's amazing what animals can do. It's like they have these magic healing powers that we don't know about.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of covered anything, unless there's anything else you would like to tell us about your life with animals and, you know, or anything else that you get up to.
Well, I'm looking at doing some more training with Elsie because I recently got a wheelchair through the NDIS, which has helped me a great deal. So I guess I need to start sort of training Elsie to do some more tasks for me. Like at the moment, she just gets her medication and gets my cane for me, my water bottles. If I've dropped a remote or something, she's great for that. But I would like to teach her to get her access to community next to me in my wheelchair a bit more. She's quite good with my scooter because I have a mobility scooter to get around. Yeah, having this new wheelchair that I've recently got, it's really opened a lot of doors for me as well. And I think having Elsie to learn a few extra things will help a lot to help me access the community a bit more as well. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, but I'm sure she'll be up for it.
Yeah, I imagine that walking along beside a wheelchair is going to be a bit of a different experience for her than walking along beside a person.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit different. So, but I'm sure she'll be great. She's been around wheelchairs and other moving things before, so she's a pretty fast learner. I'm very thankful for that.
Well, it's been lovely to have you on and having you tell our listeners about your life with your little zoo there.
Yeah, no, I love them to death and they always make me smile and give me something to get up for in the morning and something to look forward to each day, I guess.
Great,
so
thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to Animates on the RPH Network. This episode is a tribute to my late mother. Now we will hear a short story she particularly enjoyed when we last broadcast it in 2020. It is read by Monica Fulton.
Zlatay the Goat by Isaac Bashevis Singer. Zlatay the Goat takes place around Hanukkah, a Jewish religious festival usually observed in December. Hanukkah is an 8-day-long celebration of the rededication of the Temple in Jerusalem in 165 BC, following the victory of Jewish fighters over a huge Syrian army. The Temple, which had been taken over by Antiochus, ruler of the Syrians, had been violated and damaged. While the Jews were purifying and repairing the Temple, a miracle occurred. A tiny bit of oil for the holy lamp, barely enough for one day, lasted 8 days. At Hanukkah time, the road from the village to the town is usually covered with snow, but this year the winter had been a mild one. Hanukkah had almost come, yet little snow had fallen. The sun shone most of the time. The peasants complained that because of the dry weather, there would be a poor harvest of winter grain. New grass sprouted, and the peasants sent their cattle out to pasture. For Reuven the farrier, it was a bad year, and after long hesitation, he decided to sell Zlatay the goat. She was old and gave little milk. Fivel, the town butcher, had offered 8 gulden for her. Such a sum would buy Hanukkah candles, potatoes and oil for pancakes, gifts for the children and other holiday necessaries for the house. Reuven told his oldest boy, Aaron, to take the goat to town. Aaron understood what taking the goat to Fivel meant, but he had to obey his father. Leah, his mother, wiped the tears from her eyes when she heard the news. Aaron's younger sisters, Anna and Miriam, cried loudly. Aaron put on his quilted jacket and a cap with earmuffs, bound a rope around Zlaté's neck, and took along two slices of bread with cheese to eat on the road. Aaron was supposed to deliver the goat by evening, spend the night at the butcher's, and return the next day with the money. While the family said goodbye to the goat, and Aaron placed the rope around her neck, Zlaté stood as patiently and good-naturedly as ever. She licked Reuven's hand. She shook her small white beard. Zlaté trusted human beings. She knew that they always fed her and never did her any harm. When Aaron brought her out on the road to town, she seemed somewhat astonished. She'd never been led in that direction before. She looked back at him questioningly, as if to say, "Where are you taking me?" But after a while she seemed to come to the conclusion that a goat shouldn't ask questions. Still, the road was different. They passed new fields, pastures, and huts with thatched roofs. Here and there a dog barked and came running after them, but Aaron chased it away with his stick. The sun was shining when Aaron left the village. Suddenly the weather changed. A large black cloud with a bluish centre appeared in the east and spread itself rapidly over the sky. A cold wind blew in with it. The crows flew low, croaking. At first it looked as if it would rain, but instead it began to hail as in summer. It was early in the day, but it became dark as dusk. After a while, the hail turned to snow. In his 12 years, Aaron had seen all kinds of weather, but he'd never experienced a snow like this one. It was so dense it shut out the light of the day. In a short time, their path was completely covered. The wind became as cold as ice. The road to town was narrow and winding. Aaron no longer knew where he was. He could not see through the snow. The cold soon penetrated his quilted jacket. At first, Zlaté didn't seem to mind the change in weather. She, too, was 12 years old and knew what winter meant. But when her legs sank deeper and deeper into the snow, she began to turn her head and look at Aaron in wonderment. Her mild eyes seemed to ask, "Why are we out in such a storm?" Aaron hoped that a peasant would come along with his cart, but no one passed by. The snow grew thicker, falling to the ground in large, whirling flakes. Beneath it, Aaron's boots touched the softness of a ploughed field. He realised that he was no longer on the road. He'd gone astray. He could no longer figure out which was east or west, which way was the village, the town. The wind whistled, howled, whirled the snow about in eddies. It looked as if white imps were playing tag on the fields. A white dust rose above the ground. Zlaté stopped. She could walk no longer. Stubbornly, she anchored her cleft hooves in the earth and bleated as if pleading to be taken home. Icicles hung from her white beard, and her horns were glazed with frost. Aaron did not want to admit the danger, but he knew just the same that if they did not find shelter, they would freeze to death. This was no ordinary storm. It was a mighty blizzard. The snowfall had reached his knees. His hands were numb, and he could no longer feel his toes. He choked when he breathed. His nose felt like wood, and he rubbed it with snow. Zlaté's bleating began to sound like crying. Those humans in whom she had so much confidence had dragged her into a trap. Aaron began to pray to God for himself and for the innocent animal. Suddenly, he made out the shape of a hill. He wondered what it could be. Who had piled snow into such a huge heap? He moved toward it, dragging Zlaté after him. When he came near it, he realised that it was a large haystack which the snow had blanketed. Aaron realised immediately that they were saved. With great effort, he dug his way through the snow. He was a village boy and knew what to do. When he reached the hay, he hollowed out a nest for himself and the goat. No matter how cold it may be outside, in the hay it is always warm. And hay was food for Zlate. The moment she smelled it, she became contented and began to eat. Outside, the snow continued to fall. It quickly covered the passageway Aaron had dug. But a boy and an animal need to breathe, and there was hardly any air in their hideout. Aaron bored a kind of a window through the hay and snow and carefully kept the passage clear. Zlate, having eaten her fill, sat down on her hind legs and seemed to have regained her confidence in man. Aaron ate his two slices of bread and cheese, but after the difficult journey he was still hungry. He looked at Zlate and noticed her udders were full. He lay down next to her, placing himself so that when he milked her, he could squirt the milk into his mouth. It was rich and sweet. Zlate was not accustomed to being milked that way, but she did not resist. On the contrary, she seemed eager to reward Aaron for bringing her to a shelter whose very walls, floor and ceiling were made of food. Through the window, Aaron could catch a glimpse of the chaos outside. The wind carried before it whole drifts of snow. It was completely dark, and he did not know whether night had already come or whether it was the darkness of the storm. Thank God that in the hay it was not cold. The dried hay, grass and field flowers exuded the warmth of the summer sun. Zlate ate frequently. She nibbled from above, below, from the left and right. Her body gave forth an animal warmth, and Aaron cuddled up to her. He had always loved Zlate, but now she was like a sister. He was alone, cut off from his family, and wanted to talk. He began to talk to Zlate. "Zlate, what do you think about what's happened to us?" he asked. "Meh," Zlate answered. "If we hadn't found this stack of hay, we would both be frozen stiff by now," Aaron said. "Meh," was the goat's reply. "If the snow keeps on falling like this, we may have to stay here for days," Aaron explained. "Meh," Zlate bleated. What does meh mean?" Aaron asked. "You better speak up clearly." "Meh, meh," Zlate tried. "Well, let it be meh then," Aaron said patiently. "You can't speak, but I know you understand. I need you and you need me. Isn't that right?" "Meh." When Aaron opened his eyes, he didn't know whether it was morning or night. The snow had blocked up his window. He tried to clear it, but when he had bored through to the length of his arm, he still hadn't reached the outside. Luckily, he had his stick with him and was able to break through to the open air. It was still dark outside. The snow continued to fall and the wind wailed, first with one voice and then with many. Sometimes it had the sound of devilish laughter. Zlate, too, awoke, and when Aaron greeted her, she answered, "Meh!" Yes, Zlate's language consisted of only one word, but it meant many things. Now she was saying, "We must accept all that God gives us, heat, cold, hunger, satisfaction, light and darkness." Aaron had awakened hungry. He had eaten up his food, but Zlate had plenty of milk. For 3 days, Aaron and Zlate stayed in the haystack. Aaron had always loved Zlate, but in these 3 days he loved her more and more. She fed him with her milk and helped keep him warm. She comforted him with her patience. He told her many stories, and she always cocked her ears and listened. When he patted her, she licked his hand and his face. Then she said, "Meh," and he knew it meant, "I love you too." The snow fell for 3 days, though after the first day it was not as thick and the wind quieted down. Sometimes Aaron felt that there could never have been a summer, that the snow had always fallen, ever since he could remember. He, Aaron, never had a father or mother or sisters. He was a snow child, born of the snow, and so was Zlate. It was so quiet in the hay, that his ears rang in the stillness. Aaron and Zlaté slept all night and a good part of the day. As for Aaron's dreams, they were all about warm weather. He dreamed of green fields, trees covered with blossoms, clear brooks and singing birds. By the third night, the snow had stopped, but Aaron did not dare to find his way home in the darkness. The sky became clear and the moon shone, casting silvery nets on the snow. Aaron dug his way out and looked at the world. It was all quiet, white, dreaming dreams of heavenly splendour. The stars were large and close. The moon swam in the sky as in the sea. On the morning of the fourth day, Aaron heard the ringing of sleigh bells. The haystack was not far from the road. The peasant who drove the sleigh pointed out the way to him, not to the town and Fivel the butcher, but home to the village. Aaron had decided in the haystack that he would never part with Zlaté. Aaron's family and their neighbours had searched for the boy and the goat, but had found no trace of them during the storm. They feared they were lost. Aaron's mothers and sisters cried for him. His father remained silent and gloomy. Suddenly, one of the neighbours came running to their house with the news that Aaron and Zlaté were coming up the road. There was great joy in the family. Aaron told them how he had found the stack of hay and how Zlaté had fed him with her milk. Aaron's sisters kissed and hugged Zlaté and gave her a special treat of chopped carrots and potato peels, which Zlaté gobbled up hungrily. Nobody ever again thought of selling Zlaté, and now that the cold weather had finally set in, the villagers needed the services of Reuben the furrier once more. When Hanukkah came, Aaron's mother was able to fry pancakes every evening, and Zlaté got her portion too. Even though Zlaté had her own pen, she often came to the kitchen, knocking on the door with her horns to indicate that she was ready to visit, and she was always admitted. In the evening, Aaron, Miriam and Anna played the dreidel. Zlaté sat near the stove, watching the children near the flickering of the Hanukkah candles. Once in a while, Aaron would ask her, "Zlaté, do you remember the 3 days we spent together?" And Zlaté would scratch her neck with a horn, shake her white bearded head, and come out with a single sound which expressed all her thoughts and all her love. That was Zlaté the Goat by Isaac Bashevis Singer.
You have been listening to Animates. It was recorded by 2RPH Sydney for the RPH Network. Research by Joseph Schwanzer. Additional reading by Monica Fulton. And I'm Katie Brooks. Please join us again next time for more stories of animals and their mates.